What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL Live. Joined, as always, by my co-host, Jonathan Holder. Jonathan, what's going on, brother?
Man, it is an awesome day. Closer and closer to the draft. Got fallout coming tomorrow evening. Man, it's a good time to be a fan of a lot of different things right now.
Yeah, it definitely is a good time to be a fan. It is a good time to... entertainment is at an all-time high. For the first time in years, I actually found myself like paying attention to the fact that WrestleMania was this past weekend. So that was interesting. I kind of got caught up in the storyline that was, you know, Cody Rhodes defeating Roman Reigns. I didn't watch like all of it by any stretch of the imagination, but it's like they did a really good job of hitting a lot of nostalgic beats, you know, during that, yeah. And which, you know, growing up watching wrestling, that was entertaining. Spence's Pass, Chris asking me, how was the camping? Spence's Pass weekend out on West Point Lake, dude, that was awesome. That was exactly what I needed, you know, get away from everything, sit outside and like cook breakfast when it's like crisp, cool air outside. It was good stuff. It was a real good recharge. But it still amazes me. I spent all weekend telling my daughter not to get in the lake, and wouldn't you know it,
mm-hmm. What do you expect?
I expect, as a father, my daughter to listen to me. But I also remember, as a child, definitely not listening to my parents. So,
nope.
Willie Doc is concerned, Jonathan, that you are hatless. Looks like you might have got a fresh haircut.
I did.
I see that. Yeah, looking all. I need
looking
to get
spiffy.
Yeah, yeah. He's looking slick, as they would say.
I had to it was starting to poke out down here.
Oh yeah, see, I got the flyaways going on and all this jazz. Like, yeah.
I hadn't quite got that far yet because I keep like the sides, you know, trim. but I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like you put the hat on and it's like, you're like a male mini version of Gidget.
That's right. Just anyway, well, we got a handful of things to get into, so we might as well just get into it. So, all right, as I say, you know, I was out of pocket most of the weekend, wrapped up my Sunday evening by joining the One Time for the Fans podcast. They were gracious enough to have me on, and that really got me primed and back into the the flow of the football stuff. But we've had a handful of new additions to the team in the past couple of days. At least that's the last time we have talked. Seems like we have made a flurry of like depth signings, a flurry of, cover your butt kind of signings in a sense, which we can infer some things, and we will infer some things because that's what we do going into the draft. But let's start off with the first one being kind of out of nowhere. We signed a cornerback from Arizona, Antonio Hamilton, 31 years old, played the last few years in Arizona. I'm going to try to get his information pulled up here so that I sound like I know what I'm talking about. Antonio Hamilton. Let's see. There it was. Football cornerback. That's what he is. So he's 6 foot 195, standard size, you know, standard corner, nothing, you know, crazy there. Age
kind of prototypical,
right? Prototypical, because English is my first and only language. Okay, so 31 years old, so on the older side, adding, you know, to that wide receiver room. Last 3 years in Arizona, Not a ton of like stats to speak of. This past year, though, I'll say this: he had played 14 games or started 9 games, played 14, and had 11 pass defenses. So pass deflections. So that's a pretty good number. But again, this doesn't preclude you from drafting a corner or what have you.
No, but I think personally, I think this probably, if we only get the one pick in the first round, I think this probably maybe means we don't look at cornerback first round.
Now, that's the part that we're going to infer, right? Because yeah. We didn't just stop there. If you had added just Antonio Hamilton and left it at that, I might have been like, okay, they're kind of wanting to replace, Jeff Okudah, in the sense of like a veteran with, you know, a good amount of starting experience, so on and so forth. Like maybe, you know, lesser talented version, but more experience because he's been in the league longer, so on and so forth, all those kind of things, right? Yeah. So that was my first thought. And then the next day, I think, let me get it pulled up. I want to get this right.
We officially signed him yesterday, but yeah, I remember it was hearing about this a few days ago.
Yeah, it was announced the day before. But then on the 8th, yesterday, we made another cornerback signing, and that was a name that's a little more familiar. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, I recognize this name. And that was Kevin King, and he's formerly of the Green Bay Packers. Now, here's the tie here. He has a tie to Jimmy Lake in Washington, you know, because Jimmy Lake coached him, you know, out there in Washington. Now, he's 28. Right.
Well, he also has a connection to Jerry Gray.
Correct. From his Green Bay days. Yeah. Okay. So, right. Nick just said the same thing. He says, you know, Kevin King played for Gray and Lake. Right. So there's heavy familiarity. And in the NFL, if there's one thing I know, it's as much about who you know as it is about what you know. So anyway, he sat out all of 2022 with like mental health concerns, I believe is what I read. Or, you know, like wanting to get his mind right and his body right.
Right.
He came back in 22, but I don't even think he made it out of preseason and he tore his something. Hold on. See, I had all this in my head and now I'm getting blank on it.
And then he injured himself this offseason, didn't he?
No, it was last offseason.
Last offseason, okay.
Right, and I'm trying to remember what that injury was. Injury, let's see if I can get it pulled up. I bet your chat's going to pull it up before I will. Let's see, he sits out. He had tore his Achilles tendon during an offseason workout at the beginning of 22. So,
okay.
So that's something else to consider, but he was a pretty decent corner.
It was 2022. He chose to sit out the season for personal reasons.
Correct. And it was 23.
Could have been COVID related. Could have been who knows what else related.
Mm-hmm.
He then missed 2023 due to the torn Achilles.
Yeah.
Which is good because that means that if we're expecting him to do anything this year, then having it, depending on when it happened last offseason, the earlier the better, obviously, that means that he'll probably be ready for the season.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, so you take a guy who's familiar with both coaches, but he's 28 years old coming off of an Achilles tear. Mm-hmm. So it's both of these signings are like, low risk, potentially high reward. Yeah. You know, Kevin King was a decent corner. I'm not going to say he was anything extremely spectacular because his last full season in Green Bay in 21, like he only played 10 games and only started 6. So, like, he wasn't a full-time starter. The last time he was a full-time starter, you could say, was 2019 and 2020. 2020, he only played 11 games. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I think the mix of those two do kind of point towards you may not be taking a corner in the first round. Like, you may want to come out of the draft with a corner, you know, for maybe a potential. Chris says he's got more low lights on than highlights on YouTube. Oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that may, like, it may be tipping their hand a little bit in a way that Terry Fontenot has yet to do so far, which is something I'm finding extremely interesting myself. So,
but again, like you said, these guys, most likely we're looking at these guys as now I could see Antonio Hamilton if they were like, hey, we're going to go with Antonio, you know, assuming that he doesn't hurt himself or anything like that. Then I can see them going into the season with AJ Terrell on one side, Antonio Hamilton on the other, and worrying about potentially finding his, like, either a replacement for AJ or an actual wide receiver too in, like, next year's draft or something like that.
Right.
Potentially.
Right. And that's possible. And so now also, you know, Nick does bring up a good point, you know, camp bodies in a sense, yes, but camp bodies tend to get signed over the summer, like before we get to camp. You know, kind of deal.
The closer you get to camp, the guys that you end up signing there, most of the time, that's just like, we just need people to play to practice against.
Right, right. We just need reps so that we're not having to run our guys into the ground per se. But that's kind of leans me towards what Fred's alluding to here with our first super chat of the day. Fred, we appreciate you greatly.
Thank you, Mr. Butts.
He says, Turner is definitely the pick now. I don't know if I'm going to say definitely the pick. But it's starting to feel like the general consensus is Turner for the Atlanta Falcons. Like, that's, you know, almost every, like, mock draft you look at, it's either Turner or Quinyon Mitchell, you know, or now maybe Terrion Arnold because he was at the facility today, according to his social media. So that's something to consider. Daniel Flick had a tweet. Oh, let me try to get down to it. Where'd it go? Aha. It says, among the most frequently linked prospects to Atlanta in the pre-draft process, some confirmed top visits. So these are the people that have been linked to us the most, and we finally gotten some top 30 visits out of them, or they're scheduled at least, and that's Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Terrion Arnold, and Quinyon Mitchell. So those are definitely your first round targets, it feels like, for Atlanta. And that's either an edge or it's a corner.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to have a lot to do with if we're able to drop down the board some. It's really feeling like that's what this draft is pushing towards.
Yeah. I don't feel there's any urge to move up. Now, they could surprise us all and do that, but you know, it doesn't feel like there's an urge. The only reason to move up in my mind is if you're going to want to pick up one of the QBs.
Right. Right.
And I don't think if a QB falls to you, like for some reason, if somehow Drake May falls to 8, you know, we're looking at Dallas Turner. Yeah, we're looking at Jared Verse. Yeah, we're looking at maybe going back. But if a guy with that kind of talent falls to you at 8, who most people think he probably needs to sit for at minimum a year.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, you're talking about Kirk Cousins. So maybe he sits for 2 years, maybe even 3 years. Do you take that guy and be like, we're going to hold on to him, whatever, and let him learn behind Kirk Cousins? Maybe. But at the end of the day, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think he's going to fall. And so it does feel more like we're going back instead of up if we move at all.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. As I do feel like if there's any movement, I think it's going backwards. I think somebody may come up for one of the tackles that might still be available. If one of the big three wide receivers are still sitting there at eight, I could see somebody potentially trying to move up for a Dunze or Neighbors. If one of those is for some odd reason still sitting there, if I don't see anybody moving up for Brock Bowers per se, just I think honestly, and I know it's going to sound bad because it is us, but I think so far with Kyle Pitts, the way that has turned out may actually continue to scare people from wanting to take a tight end that high and then giving up assets to get said tight end. And it's not just Pitts. I mean, Evan Engram hasn't necessarily turned out to be a, you know, barn burner. Neither has O.J. Howard, David Njoku. Like, there's a handful.
The best now Njoku has kind of shown up.
He's starting to now, yeah, for sure, yeah. For sure.
But now some of the better, like, young tight ends are not taken in the first round. They're taken in the second.
Right. I mean, when you had, like, how Sam LaPorta, you know, showed up last year and he wasn't taken in the first round. So I don't see anybody moving up necessarily to get Brock Bowers. But in this draft, like I said, if one of those tackles is sitting there, like you'll move for tackles, you'll move for quarterbacks, obviously, and you'll move for like wide receivers. Edge. Oh yeah, edge and wide receivers. Yeah. Like those are like some of the premium positions. And so with that being said, if one of those guys are still sitting there, I think you could see that kind of movement. But I think what you're seeing now with the Falcons is them going, okay, we're probably going to end up having to stick at eight. So, you know, what's our best option at eight? Is it one of these corners? Is it one of these cornerbacks? Like, is it one of these edge guys? Like, which one is you know, the best value for sitting at eight? Because I don't think, unfortunately, even the corners, you don't have a Sauce Gardner. You know, you don't have a Patrick Surtain. Like, you got some good corners. Like, Terrion Arnold's a good corner. Kool-Aid McKinstry's a good corner. Quinyon Mitchell's a good corner. But they're not a top 10, like a consensus top 10, so to speak. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah. I think that if Bowers goes ahead of us, right, like if Bowers goes in the somewhere in the top seven, I think that pushes either Neighbors or Odunze to eight. And I think if either one of those guys are there and you get stuck at eight, I say stuck like it's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But if you get stuck at eight and you can't move out of it, if we're just looking for best player available, kind of, you know, if we're going to stay true to that, maybe we do, maybe we don't, who knows. But if we're going to stay true to that philosophy, then you're probably picking Neighbors or Odunze over a Dallas Turner, over a Jared Verse, over a Latu, just because in the overall scheme of things, those are the better talents.
Yeah.
I mean, for your number eight pick.
You're not wrong in that scenario, and Chris had a good question or a good statement earlier. Let me see if I can get back up to it. Oh, here's one that I missed earlier. One time for the fan, I spoke about them earlier. They said, good evening, chat, shout out, major shout out to Pound for Pound. That was a fun show last night. If y'all haven't had a chance to go check that out, I highly recommend it, not just because I was on it. Jack and I'm blanking on the TJ. I'm bad with names. Y'all know I am. Anyway, they both were awesome to chat with last night. So yes. Definitely go check that out. Anyway,
Good, guys.
Yeah, that's right. It was, where was it at? I saw the, okay. Yeah, it was Chris. He says, at what point did we finally lock in on Bijan? Cause it feels like this year will go down to day of. I want to say it was probably the week before. So that would be like starting maybe this week, maybe next week, probably, is when we really started to hear, you know, like the guys like Daniel Jeremiah, when he puts out his final mock, he doesn't, his mocks are, to me, are the closest to being accurate. And the reason why I say that is because he does his mocks off of what he's hearing the league say.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, like, his opinion is his big board, like, is his top 50. That's his opinion, right?
And the mock draft is what he thinks is actually going
on. Right. Like, yeah, yeah. So, like his big board is his evaluation and where he thinks these players fit, you know, as far as, like, just ranking talent. And then his mocks tend to be what he's hearing from the league itself. So, it was the last mock, which I think comes out either this week or next week, is when you got, you know, Drake London, you know, mocked to the Falcons, is when you started getting Bijan mocked to the Falcons. When we started getting Kyle Pitts mocked to the Falcons. So it'll be interesting, because I do feel like this year is, like Chris says, is more, feels like it's coming down to day of. I don't think we have as good of a opinion, I guess you could say, a good of a lock. I do feel like it's, I feel like it's edge.
Yeah.
Logic tells me it's edge. My logic, I guess you could say, tells me that it's edge. And especially considering you still haven't re-signed Bud Dupree. You still haven't re-signed Calais Campbell. To me, those two guys feel like they would be willing to come back.
They haven't signed anywhere else either. So
correct. But then you do go out and sign James Smith Williams, mm-hmm. who is a 4 or 5 year starter, not starter, but 4 or 5 year player from Washington, former 7th round pick, 7 career sacks, 264. What is it?
Yeah, he's like 6'4", 265. Which, when you look at who's the coach there now, that's kind of not the typical defensive end for a Dan Quinn-style defense.
Correct.
He likes them a little bit leaner, a little bit faster, not the, you know, the 265 and up guys.
Right, which is, I mean, so, like, if we're doing playing in the business of inferring, right, like, what does that say about what this regime is going, like what this coaching staff wants, because that's more in the line of a Bud Dupree. So are they signing this guy figuring they can get the same kind of production out of him as they did out of Bud Dupree at a much cheaper price?
Physical measurables. We're just talking height, weight, arm length, hand size, all that stuff. This James Smith, and I'm not trying to comp him as this or what he will be as this, but he literally is like the spitting image of a Latu. Like, same, you know, right around, you know, about the same height. I think Latu might be 6'3 instead of 6'4, but he's 267, you know, 33 and a third, or 33 and a half or whatever arm length. What was it, 9 and something hand size. Like, they literally, just from a physical measurement standpoint, they're literally is that guy. You know? So
that part I hadn't put together. So that's interesting, you know, especially with the, you know, obviously the connection with Jimmy Lake and Latu. Like, are you trying to have that type of pass rusher on the field all the time? By all accounts, James Smith Williams is a high motor guy. Mm-hmm. His best year came last year when he started 14 games, and in 14 games had 3 sacks with 5 tackles for loss and 16 QB hits.
Now, there was a really good cut up
of
him earlier today. Like, he wasn't always getting to the quarterback, but he seemed to always be near the quarterback. He was constantly in pursuit, didn't give up. He at least, you know, was making the quarterback either get rid of the ball, you know, made if he wasn't getting rid of the ball quickly, then there was going to be problems. So that, you know, he was getting, you know, into the backfield.
Right.
But yeah, the numbers, the finish, the production wasn't quite there. So as far as the sack numbers go.
Hmm. And how, let's see here. And he's 26 years old. He's only been in the league for, this will be his fourth/fifth year. He came in the league in 2020. Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see what kind of contribution he has. Willie Dock has a good point. He says, I think they're just signing good depth so that there's no major drop off with injuries. I think that's what it is right now. They're adding, you know, they spent the majority of free agent adding to the offensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that extensively. Now it seems like they've, you know, have turned their attention back to the, you know, to the defense and trying to shore some things up, you know, going into the draft. Maybe not having, I still can't act like they don't have a major need at edge. You may not necessarily have a major need anywhere else. You may be comfortable with DeMarco Hellam starting next to Jesse Bates. You might be comfortable with, you know, now that Eddie Goldman might survive the Georgia Heat and actually, you know, put on a Falcons uniform this time, you know, you might feel better about your D line, but just, man, you're still talking about, you know, Onyemata coming off ankle injury that he nursed throughout most of the second half of the season. Grady Jarrett coming off of, you know, an Achilles tear. Those are your two starters coming back from, you know, an injury plagued season, right? So,
yeah, but here's what I will say. What I am interested in seeing, don't really know. I'm not going to say anything about Malone because we just don't know what he
did. Yeah, we just don't
know. What we do know is we know that Arnold Ebiketie, last year, if we look at if we look at like how many snaps he ran versus his production, like if you were to extrapolate out like what he did last year over, say, some of the other DNs or outside linebackers that played like 900 to 1,000 snaps in a season, then you're looking at a guy that's in the 12, 13, 14 sack range. And if we can get him more snaps out there, then I think that production goes up.
Yeah, I mean, he had, 12 QB hits, 3 tackles for loss to go along with his 6 sacks, and that was a jump from 2.5 sacks his rookie year. So you can definitely talk yourself into him being an ascending player. sorry, Chris called me off guard. He goes, I've heard stories about Georgia humidity. Let's not sell it short just yet. No, well, yeah, hey.
It can be rough.
That humidity can kick you in the teeth, man.
But you're
to me, you're putting a good bit on, you know, Ebiketie as an ascending player, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it's his third season. You know, so it's not like he's a rookie that you're putting this on. This is a guy who's in his third season. He got more reps last year, I think, probably than he did his rookie year. So he's moving up in that stat, even in his rookie year, he wasn't getting the amount of snaps. But if you looked at his, finish rate, win rate, all those things, those numbers were up there with some of the better rookies out of the class.
Would you believe me if I told you that he actually had less snaps?
Last year?
According to Pro Football Reference. So I would like to check that with somebody else, like maybe PFF or something. But according to Pro Football Reference, he had 516 snaps in 2022. And then in 2023, he had 384 snaps. So he was actually more productive on less snaps. So... Right. It'd be interesting if that's actually true or not.
That would be interesting. Like normally, it felt like he did get more last year, but I could absolutely be wrong.
Like I'm with Chris in those. Like Malone is a guy I'm hoping makes a comeback, you know, with this staff because yeah, as King points out here, you know, with this 3-4, I'm hoping we're going to be sending a lot more, you know, a lot of blitzes because I don't see the secondary covering for long. With that switch, then that's with, you know, Ebiketie, that this will make his third defense in his third year, like his third, like defensive switch. Yeah. So I don't know how much that, hopefully that doesn't stunt him, you know, too bad. Cause sometimes that can be a big hindrance. Let's see here. I'm trying to see if I could figure out snap counts for. Okay. Yeah, anyway. So, new comment. Let's see. GA says, I think making the edge we draft will contribute a lot this season. If we do end up drafting an edge, I don't see how we don't. And to me, it's got to be in the first round. Somebody was talking about they've seen a lot of like Vic Beasley comparisons to Turner, and I don't agree there. Like Vic Beasley in college was 235, you know, Turner is like 245, so he's trending to be a heavier, and Turner wins with more than just finesse.
Yeah,
you know, where Vic Beasley was a wide nine, which is what Clemson played. He was that wide nine, you know, speedball. So
he really excelled like in the twists and the stunts,
right?
Like that's where he excelled at, where he could use his speed to outrun a guard to the middle of the line,
right? And where, you know, Turner had, you know, 10 sacks was his best total. Vic Beasley had 13, which followed it up with 9 his, you know, last year. So I don't know. I don't necessarily see it. I think a lot of people see Turner being like the more athletic, you know, edge guy, the more, you know, like freaky athlete. And
oh yeah,
here in Atlanta, anytime you get the freaky athlete edge, we're automatically going to, you know, go back to Beasley because that's, you know,
yeah.
Beasley's game. But, was.
There's like when I look at Dallas Turner, I remember last year coming into the, like, as we got closer to the draft, we started to hear some of the same stuff that we're hearing about Dallas Turner. We started hearing a lot of the same stuff about Will Anderson.
Right.
Yep. A lot of people were looking at Will Anderson and they're like, oh, but you know, he was on that great Alabama defense. You know, he this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. He goes to Houston and does nothing but look like a great rookie.
Right.
You know, so like at the end of the day, I know I've said it. I know you said it. There's been a lot of people on Twitter that have said it. At the end of the day, if we come out of this first round, this first night, with any one of Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Latu, if we get any one of those three guys, we have a player.
Hmm.
Okay? Like some of them do one thing maybe a little bit better than the others. Somehow are a little bit more athletic than the others, but at the end of the day, you know, Latu is a technical marvel when it comes to the technique of rushing the passer. Jared Verse is kind of the middle guy. He's got some good technique, but he needs to work on some things. He's got some good athleticism, but he's maybe a little bit bigger. Doesn't mm-hmm. quite have the fluidity of Latu or Turner. And then Dallas Turner, like you said, freak athlete, absolutely measurables out the wazoo. Guy runs a crazy 40, has a good, you know, jump, you know, he jumps really good. He's got the long arms. He does, you know, he has a good bull rush. He does have some good finesse moves. He's got good counter moves, but at the end of the day, you know, so they are all kind of doing their own little thing, but the best, in my opinion, the best all around guy to plug in day one and get good production out of, and probably expect it, would probably be Latu, just because we've seen him drop back in coverage. We've seen him get two interceptions last year. We saw him get a boatload of sacks. Yes, he probably had some games against some really good guys where he got beat, but that's going to happen. But this guy's also had a crazy injury. He's had to fight through the rehab from that injury, get back on the football field, not just be a charity case, but prove that he can do it. And again, when you hear Raheem Morris talk about what he's, when he talked about some of the coaches, specifically Jimmy Lake, it's like this guy made it to the pinnacle, became a head coach in college football, and then, fell down and has had to work his way back up. Like hitting that adversity, getting knocked down by it, getting back up and continuing on and being successful, he values that. Of the three guys that we've seen or that we're talking about, the one guy that has kind of gone through that is Latu. Guy had a crazy injury, could have potentially ended his playing career for the rest of his life, but he came back, got cleared, had to work his way back into it, and was extremely successful coming back from that adversity. When you look at that, that's in my brain. That's why I'm thinking, if nothing else, when you hear you may never play again, and if you do, you could seriously hurt yourself, but you still do it anyways. To me, that shows tenacity, and it shows maybe some level of recklessness, but also a guy who loves the game and really wants to play the game and could not see himself doing anything other than playing the game of football. And that passion, along with working through the adversity and everything, in my brain, that makes me think this is the guy for Raheem Morris' team.
Right.
Love to have.
Yeah, no doubt. My only concern with Latu and Verse to an extent, and I could be wrong. I mean, heck, we won't know until they get in the league. But if you're looking at and thinking of just a talent evaluation standpoint, part of what you're trying to see is you're trying to project what can these guys become. Like how much meat is left on the bone as far as, development goes. Can they be a better version of themselves, or are they tapped out? And I'm not sitting here trying to say that I'm the most keen evaluator, because I'm definitely not. If I was, I'd be doing something different than this per se, or I'd be doing it on a bigger platform. But it does seem like I've heard a lot of people say, a lot of folks that I trust, that like guys like Latu and guys like Verse might be more tapped out as far as potential than a guy like Turner. And if you're going to spend a first round draft asset, I've always viewed first round picks as, I'm taking a swing at the Hall of Fame here. Whether I'm right or wrong, I'm saying that I feel like this guy is going to be good enough to be in the Hall of Fame. Obviously, the vast majority of them aren't. That's not how it works out. But to me, that's what you're saying with a first-round pick. You're looking for a franchise cornerstone. And I guess maybe I'm probably letting it stick in my head too much, but I heard somebody make the comparison with Latu and Leighton Vander Esch. And Vander Esch was a guy I really liked coming out of college. Linebacker, loved the way he played. Played with his freaking hair on fire. Thought it was awesome. Had a crazy neck injury. And then, basically he was only able to play 5 years in the league. And, for those 5 years, it was up and down, as far but as...
It was up and down because he kept getting injured.
That's what I'm saying.
When he was in, he was really good, but yeah, right. I totally get that too.
And so maybe I'm letting that probably scare me a little bit too much with Latu, because before that evaluator made that connection, I was like, Latu's a good, the dude, so to speak, because of, the hand fighting that he has and the ability to win in a handful of different ways. I think Chris said, you know, based on like solely on win rates, I want both of the UCLA guys. And we're going to get into that here as we wrap up the show. But yeah, like watching Latu, both those guys, you know, popped off to me. And so, hold on. Yep. Yes. And so, yeah, we're going to start to wrap it up. Let's get to this right here. Willie Doc, we appreciate you greatly with your $5. Are you going to cut me off with a da-da-da-da?
Nope. Thank you, Mr. Willie Doc.
That's it. He says, wild two-part question. What is the lowest Latu will go in this draft? And do you think the Falcons take Verse/Turner and then trade back up to get Latu? Okay, I don't see the latter part happening. I could be completely wrong on that one. Under a different regime, we have double dipped before with Trufant and then Alford, but that was first round, second round. I don't know if he would come back up. And I don't think Latu makes it out of the 20s, to be completely honest.
I mean, I think the absolute lowest is probably going to be in the low, like the early 20s, like 21, 22 at worst. Let's see. He may not even make it to the 20s.
Because it wouldn't surprise me one bit. I'm trying to see. I'm trying to get it pulled up now so that I know where we're at.
I will say if he somehow were to fall to the second round and the Falcons had a chance to pick him in the second round and they did, I would love that, because not only is this a guy that has gone through that adversity, made it back, now he's got a chip on his shoulder because he was supposed to be a number one draft pick. You pick him in the second, he's going to be like, I'm going to make everyone understand that that was a huge mistake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Willie, you're not wrong. We did double dip for Lindstrom and McGarry when we came back up to get McGarry at the back end of the first round. But again, that was Dimitroff. And that was Dimitroff with McKay calling the shots as everybody. You know, you no longer have that scenario. So who's to say? I don't think Latu falls past like Baltimore at 30. Like, they're not scared of taking, you know, edge rushers with, you know, injury history. They took David Oboe or Oboe from Michigan a couple years back. So I couldn't see him falling past that. Definitely couldn't see him falling past like the Cardinals. They need everything as far as that goes. Same thing with, definitely could see that. Not much further than the 20s, really, like the full range of the 20s. Let's see. King says, well, let's say this, to have no top edge on our team, to learn from Latu is the best pick with his skill set all around. Remember, a lot of our young guys have no one in that position to learn from. So you're talking about like no veteran leadership. Now, it wouldn't surprise me that if after the draft they brought back Calais Campbell, because it seems like there might be some like mutual interest there, but it wouldn't surprise me one bit.
It wouldn't surprise me if we brought back him and or Bud Dupree.
Right, one. Along with the first round pick. All right, let's get into our at least a little bit of this before we have to wrap up, because we got to wrap up right at 8 tonight. So we got about 15 more minutes that we can at least get through some of these. This will probably be the back end of our show for the next few weeks, the best of the rest. And so, Jonathan, you want to kick off who your best of the rest is?
So we've talked about Dallas Turner. We've talked about Verse. We've talked about Latu. Another guy, you know, I could have gone with maybe like a Chop Robinson or something like that, but I'm going to go with Marshawn Nealand.
There you go.
The guy to look at, you know, just from some of the film that I looked at him, really powerful rusher, uses his hands well, in my eyes, like when I watched him. I saw him multiple times working out at both a 2-point and 3-point stance. I saw him moving up and down, you know, all around the line, rushing from different angles, from different positions, through different gaps, and then, you know, I actually saw him drop back in coverage and make some plays and seemed to be a good tackler. You know, this is a guy that, you know, when you look at his, again, I think when you look at his just physical measurables, he's kind of in line with Olatu. He's kind of in line with the guy we just signed today, or signed the other day, Smith Williams. Mm-hmm. Like, he is in that mold. But he's definitely a guy that I could see. If you're, you know, we were talking about double dipping earlier, I don't necessarily see like getting a Turner or Verse and then coming back up and getting a Latu. I could see them doing Turner, Verse, Latu, whatever, and then in, say, the second, maybe the third round, because I think that's where he lands, is like later the second, maybe early third, somewhere in that range. I think if you do that and then pick up a Marshawn Nealand, I think that's definitely a potential thing there. But yeah, he's, you know, he's just a guy that, like, when I looked at the film, I was like, man, this guy looks real good.
So if any of y'all are familiar with the relative athletic score or the RAS score, this is, and I'm going to go ahead and like piggyback off yours. My you know, best of the rest is Latu's running partner, which is, you know, Gabriel Murphy. And so here's a side-by-side like comparison of their athletic scores. So both of them have an overall pretty high athletic score, which is a metric, not the metric, right?
Yeah.
So it just gives us something to point at and to look at, right? So Nealand is, you know, 6'3", 267. So that's in that James Smith Williams Latu. Now, Gabriel is a little leaner in that Dallas Murphy type area at 247 and 6'2". But they both bench, you know, he 25 reps, 21 reps, 40-yard dash, 4.7, 4.6.
Hold on 1 second. I think you see the bench press 25, 21. We see that Nealon's got the longer arms at 34 and a half versus 30 and a half for correct. Gabriel Murphy. So that's probably, you know, one thing that will make it easier for Murphy to get those extra four reps up.
No doubt. And also, this is something that you, with Nealon, you got to remember that 34 inch arms, like that's long. That's, yeah, well, that's in what they have wanted to like draft. I'd be interested to see. I wonder if it'll let me do this. I don't know what their database looks like. If I could spell, I'd be deadly.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I figured it was close enough.
I've had to spell it a couple times now. So,
let's see what game. There we go. So, see, 34.
Yep.
For Arnold Ebiketie, 34. So, that's a good indicator of what they, you know, what they like. Same.
And yeah, and you the see they press. Both, yep. Yeah, they bench press both have the 34 inch arms.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Now here's a little difference there in the, like the 20 yard splits and the, but even though his 10 yard split, they're like, he's a little faster on the 10 yard split.
Yeah.
So like, he's actually pretty comparable to Arnold Ebiketie.
Yep.
So that can be interesting there. But yeah, both of those guys, like when I was watching Latu early on, like Gabriel Murphy jumped off as somebody they had a really interesting, I made the tweet one point in time. Do you know, did UCLA even have a defensive tackle? Because like they had Latu and Gabriel lined up like over the guards a lot of times. Which I found to be an interesting use of their talents. But the one problem I had, I didn't realize with Marshawn, like he never got more than 4.5 sacks at Western Michigan in a year.
Yeah.
And I thought that I don't know, for some reason I was expecting more.
Well, that's the reason why I wouldn't take him in the first. You know, course, if I was gonna double dip on him, Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to be double dipping in, like, you know, like I said, late second, maybe early third. If you can wait a little bit longer and still get him, maybe midway through the third, I'd take him there too.
Right.
So
now with Gabriel Murphy, he started out at North Texas, in 2021. So he's a 5-year player, another older, you know, older player. And then he transferred to UCLA and really was able to put on a show last year, this past season, with 16 tackles for loss and eight sacks. So that's pretty good production from him. Was there another one that you wanted to hit real quick before we start wrapping this thing up?
Yeah, so the other guy, so we kind of talked about what seemed, at least what we believe to be kind of the leading contenders for who we would want to, or who we believe will be the pick. If it's not an edge, the other side of it is cornerback. And obviously, you know, the Terrion Arnolds, and Kenstry and all those guys. Another guy that, you know, when I looked at the film for him, he really popped for me was TJ Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pull this. Where is he at? Here he is. But yeah, TJ Tampa. When I watched him, strong tackler. Like every time I saw him tackling a guy, it seemed like there was always bad intentions in the team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't just, I'm going to shoestring this guy. No, he was knocking some fools out. So I really liked what I saw there. And that goes with he's just a physical player. He you know, didn't shy away from just like getting up and bumping guys or, you know, getting in guys' hip pockets. Like he was very physical from what I saw. He has good length.
Yeah, 6'2", 190, yeah.
Yeah, good length and size, good speed. Ran a 4.45 40. So, and the other thing that I thought I really liked seeing with him was he played the run really well.
Right.
He didn't shy away from the contact, didn't shy away from tackling, and got in there and mixed it up really well when it came to the run game. It seemed to play his fit, you know, like really well too. He wasn't, you know, just a wild man out there, you know, going off half cock. So
right. This kind of goes within what Charleston Nash was asking. It says, do you think there's a possibility that Raheem Morris and company could find a cornerback that they would like to groom and turn a secondary from good to one step closer to elite? And I think this might, you know, TJ Tampa sounds like a guy who could fit that mold. And I could definitely see this staff wanting to like grab some guys to groom, you know, because you've got some crazy like secondary coaches, you know, Raheem, Jimmy Lake and Jerry Gray, that's their whole background is, you know, defensive backs. And so I could definitely see them not shying away with the idea of grooming a guy.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
You know, they may have a mindset of, we don't have to have a guy in the first round because, yeah, you know, we can make some guys into some dogs, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and they can flip it on its head and go, like you said, Terrion Arnold, Quinion Mitchell, one of those guys that they trade back maybe to 11, 12, 13, somewhere in that range. And if they trade back there, maybe instead of the defensive end, maybe they go with one of those high-end cornerbacks, the higher-end quarterbacks. And then in, like, the second round, you go with, like, say, a Chop Robinson or, you know, Gabriel Murphy or somebody like that as your kind of the big defensive end guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you top all this off with Tavondre Sweat being a really just bell end here and getting a DWI a couple weeks before the draft. You know, maybe he turns into this is his, you know, weed gas mask.
Gas mask ball. I don't know. You know, Charleston follows it up. Is there anyone in the draft whose ethos sticks out to y'all?
What is ethos?
Yeah, that's what I was sitting here trying to think. It's like, man, so I'm gonna say
I don't want to sound like a dummy.
No, I was hoping you were gonna be able to tell me what that was. Ethos, me. Okay. If Charleston's over here using some like $10 words. Distinguishing character, sentiment, moral nature, or guiding beliefs of a person. All right, so I'm gonna say football ethos, like what style matches. I think Quinyon Mitchell, I saw a chart that seems to relay that he does he played a lot of the way Jimmy Lake and them like to deploy corners. So if you're looking for somebody who fits in a football ethos, I would say, Quinyon Mitchell, I would say a Dallas Turner, because of being able to run the creepers and the, simulated pressures and stuff like that. He's over here making it. We ain't trying to groom folks that way, Michael. Okay. Calm down.
Get it right. It's the diddler. Come on.
The diddler. All right, folks. Sorry to have to cut this one short tonight, but I got a wife who's not feeling too good, and I've got to go put my, do the whole bedtime routine with my daughter. So I appreciate y'all hanging with us. Next week or maybe even this Friday, maybe we can get back into a normal recording something for the weekend now with the holidays and camping past. So we'll see how that goes. Thank you, Nick. It's just a sinus infection, but that takes time and rest to get that stuff knocked out. So we appreciate y'all as always hanging out with us. Well, like I said, we'll try to be back Friday, maybe doing some more best of the rest type stuff.
Yeah, and get ready for the 8 hour, six hour stream for night one of the draft in a couple weeks. And
that's it. And for those of y'all who celebrate, tomorrow the Beast from Dan Bugler drops on The Athletic. So that's a really good draft primer that I can't wait to dive into. All right, folks, we appreciate y'all. As always, y'all can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grimm1128, GRIMM1128. Jonathan.
At Jonathan M. Holder. Just come on by and say hi.
That's right. Chris says, says, see y'all next week. Enjoy the 500 mock draft. That's right. We're making 501.
Next week we'll definitely do a mock draft.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right. Peace.
Rise up.
Rise up.
And chicken grease.
That's right.